everybody, to yet another episode of Forever Bristol City podcast. We are in joyous mood about the result because at the New York Stadium last night, in front of the Sky cameras, what a game they picked. It finished Rotherham 1, City 2. So 10 games gone, 15 points on the board, point and a half a game. That's about eighth if you extrapolate it through to the end of the season. Joining me is just you and me this morning, Ian. You know, I know you were feeling pretty despondent at half time. It wasn't a spectacle, but in summary, just a quick sort of at the final whistle, you know, you had to be happy with the points. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, the positives from the game was the fact that we won. It was another away win, and something that the coaches and Nigel Pearson must be looking at is why we are so successful away, top three, and why we're so unsuccessful at home, bottom four. Yeah. So picked up 3 points, 2 goals. Tommy came back. Positive substitutions from Nigel Pearson, actually trying to win the game, which I like. I thought Dickie and Naismith defended really well. And our finishing, when Conway got on the field and we actually created some chances, was
brilliant.
The negatives... It was an awful performance for about 80 minutes. Dreadful set pieces. Poor service and distribution throughout the first 80 minutes. Poor composure in the final third until Conway arrived. We were, as Nigel Pearson said, disjointed. Midfield was appalling to a man. Our distribution from the back was poor. Appalling passing for 80 minutes. Lack quality all over the field, really. And it was low energy, low tempo and lack of control, but
there we go.
All that, and we won.
We won. I'm delighted to say we have been joined by Chris Honor. You've connected with us, Chris. Hopefully, your sound's going to be okay, but you can hear us okay down your end. Yes.
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly. Thank you.
I mean, Ian pretty much summed up. I asked him for his 30 seconds of the game, and I said to you at half time yesterday, "You're summing up. You had it." You had it to a T, but that was a classic case maybe of writing the reporter's notes but not realising what was going to happen. Just in a nutshell, how did you rate last night?
Well, I've got to agree with Ian. You know, there was so much poor football being played. It was as if a lot of the lads had left themselves on the team bus. It's a Wednesday night in wet Yorkshire, and a few of the lads hadn't really played themselves properly. Their touch was wrong. Their passing was poor. Their movement wasn't right. Rotherham started really well, and we made it a little bit of a battle that doesn't suit us. That suited them. They were getting crosses in. We weren't going with runners. It seemed like a matter of time in the first 20 minutes that they were going to score from across. You know, Naismith, brilliant tackle in 6-yard box after about 10 minutes of the game. As Ian again said, some brilliant defending at times, but some of the passing, some of the touch, you know, I remember one going into Bell, and he tried to just control the ball on the ground. It went up to his head, and then he ended up almost back where the pass came from Pring. I mean, that's just one example, but it was probably 20 or 30 maybe 20, and we just couldn't find a rhythm at all. There was no pattern of play, and it took us to the second half. I think it was 70 minutes. I think I texted you, and I was writing all my notes on texts so I could remember things to say this morning. And it was massively disappointing. I mean, you probably mentioned it before I came on, but I was away at the weekend, and I had Robin's TV on. And I was feeling very smug after 20 minutes, and I left to go to the beach. And it was only when I managed to get to the beach that the friend I was meeting told me it was now 2-1, and I thought he was joking. And I was talking to him about the Ryder Cup, and he kept on talking to me about the football, saying, you're gonna draw that game. And I said, don't be silly. And then he told me it was 2-2 after the start of the second half. And then he gloated at 3-2 at the end, and I didn't believe him. So, you know, my whole weekend was ruined. I still felt really annoyed on come the Sunday evening. about throwing away 3 points, but the championship is full of these results. And I sometimes feel as if you've got to be grateful when you go to a place at Rotherham where you don't necessarily deserve
and you get, 3 points. And you get a result. I mean, you said to me, Chris, they didn't look on it. And you've obviously played the game. They were poor in the sense of giving away a 2-goal lead at the weekend. Yeah, it was a collective thing last night as well. I mean, as a player, even in that promotion season of 89-90, you know, were the days where you went out there and for whatever reason, you know, you weren't on it? Is it a mental thing? Is it that were they feeling, I think you used the word morale, maybe they'd been dented a bit by what had happened on Saturday, but it was so low key to begin with, wasn't it?
I think they had their confidence bruised a little bit after Saturday's game. I think a few of them were hiding. I think a few of them were still reeling from some of the tough words that were probably said in the dressing room. Sometimes it's just your mental state. You can be drained by a result like that, and it's hard to lift yourself up. But I was watching that game, and there was two players on the other team, the left back and Rathbone in midfield, who annoyed the living hell out of me. But sometimes, you know, he was digging deep because he knows he's in a relegation battle only 10 games into the season. And that's how you've got to approach the game from the off at these horrible places on a wet Wednesday in Yorkshire. I mean, it wasn't blowing a gale, but it doesn't look the most attractive place to, even with the new stadium, most attractive place to go and play. But sometimes you've got to focus on the three. You've got to have a little bit of arrogance. Be brave, be confident. And I just felt that was missing last night. I think there was a few players hiding, just doing enough, but not enough. You know, enough to hide. So that
I think I know who you mean there. I think I know who you might mean there without naming names, but we'll come on to that later. Ian, I mean, the team, as we always do in our match review, we look at the team lineup. There was a change. I mean, Taylor Gardner-Hickman came in, and Harry Cornick came in for Naki Wells. I mean, what did you think of that lineup? It does, while we've still got these injuries to, I'll call it, key players. What did you think about that lineup when you saw it an hour before kickoff?
Well, it's very predictable, wasn't it? Wells hasn't been scoring goals in open play. I know he got one on Saturday, but that pass from Stokes fullback was probably the best through ball he'll get all season. So you would have backed him to put that in, even if he was completely out of form. But he's cutting a bit of a frustrated figure, Naki. He's still trying, but there are times when he looks like he couldn't hit a cow's backside with a banjo. So I wasn't surprised that he brought Harry Cornick in. Tanner was injured on Saturday, probably should have been replaced at half-time, but wasn't, and that may have aggravated. But apparently Nigel Pearson said they sent him off for a scan. He's had the scan. It's not major damage. He's obviously just twisted it and bruised it a bit. So he may be available for Leeds, but the way that Nigel Pearson was talking, he'll probably be available after the international break. So no real surprises. I'd have gone a lot more, well, I'd say a lot more positive. I'd have played two up top.
Yeah. Well, that's eventually how we ended up for part of it.
We played Conway just in behind Wells. And those two, as Nigel Pearson alluded to after the game, they like playing together. They're good together. And if you've got smaller, quicker guys, I don't see the point in playing with a one. We haven't got this one. Even I don't think Tommy is a one who's a back-to-goal player. So I'd play two up top and I'd go... As I said,
we'll talk about that when we look forward to Leeds.
I'd go to Leeds positive and try and win because they're not in great form at home.
No, they're not. They only scraped a 1-0 win against QPR. Chris, Taylor Gardner-Hickman, he was released by West Brom, which is quite unusual. And Carlos Corberan allegedly doesn't know what his best position is. How did you rate his performance last night? Because he was on for the full 90. Is he a fullback? Is he a midfielder? Based on what you've seen so far, would you be buying him for 1.3 million in the summer, which is the agreed price, if we want to?
I think I would buy him on the performances that he's put in so far. He's one of those utility players which sometimes works against the player. I mean, I had a phase when I was versus the City team. Well, they didn't really know my best position. It was probably because I was too young and still learning the game. Hopefully he gets a run in one position or another, because it does affect your game. Yeah. You're not mentally prepared, and you don't have a run of stability if you're chopping and changing between positions. For me, I think he's a right back. I didn't think he did great last night. I think he was very exposed by sight, and the two of them didn't work great last night at all, especially the first 20 minutes when all the pressure seemed to come down that left side. And again, I really like their fullback, the left back who just
was that Black? Was it Blackwell or something like that? Or Bramall? Was it Bramall?
Bramall, it was Bramall. Well done. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I thought he was excellent. You know, and maybe if they had a few quicker, more mobile players than Hugo, some of those crosses could have been converted. But I thought there was a few players, especially in that first 20 minutes, who were missing, and he looked a little bit heavy legged. And that's what happens sometimes when you earn a lot of football.
Yeah. Staying with you, Chris, Cornick got a start last night in his, so say, preferred central position. He has his critics. He does remind me of that Steve Jones, who you'll remember at the turn of the century. That sounds a long time ago now, doesn't it? But I thought in the first half, yeah, he was one of the bright sparks coming out of it, because at least he showed a little bit of a passion. And his co-strikers, one of a better word, Sykes and Sam, were a little bit wanting, yeah?
I think the two right men were disappointing, especially first half. Cornick gives you great effort. You know, he was probably told that he had 60 minutes. Naki was probably coming on with Conway. Give us your best shot. I mean, I played in a couple of teams where managers didn't know their favoured centre forward and used to go and tell them, right, you've got the shirt for today. Give us your best 60 and then let your mate come on for the last 30. And ironically, it usually used to be the one that came on the last 30 that would score a goal and then start the next game. So there was never any continuity for the forwards. But I think Cornick's touch could be better. I think he could win a few more headers. I think he could be a bit more brighter getting the ball out of his feet and passing it a little bit earlier. Sometimes he gets the ball caught in his feet when he's trying to adjust them to play the pass. But one thing you do get from him is tireless running.
And that's what you want. I mean, if there's anything about his DNA.
It's what you want, but you also want a little bit more quality at this level. If we want to go to where we want to go, I don't want Bristol City to be a holiday camp football club. I'm fed up with watching also Rams come into my club. I want to see a bit of development, to see a bit of progress. He's the right player for the right time. Whether he's going to get us into, you know, the top six, I don't know. But
probably not. Probably not. I mean, interesting that we had him. Interesting that we had him, and they had that other ex-Luton player from last season's promotion winning team, Oniyinya. I've got that pronunciation all wrong, but he was a handful up front in the mould of the big number nine. But moving away from individual players, Ian, if you look at that first half, when it was awful for, I mean, the first 20 minutes, you know, I was half tempted to flick across and watch Coronation Street, because I thought there was rugby on last night, because Corrie was on Tuesday. It was on at 8 o'clock. But Cal Naismith, now, against West Brom, he did a tackle right at the end of the game that 50-50, you're going to concede a penalty. Against Leicester, he conceded the penalty. At the weekend, he did a weak header, which put Pring under pressure for that worldy strike. And if you looked at the third goal, he lost his man in midfield and he was 30 yards behind the bloke who put the ball in the back of the net. But last night, that tackle that he did, yeah, and I don't know if it was on Hugo, four goals in his three previous games against Bristol City for three separate clubs, a little fact there. That was a good tackle. And, you know, that makes up for all the other stuff, or not, in your view. We haven't got much choice at the moment, have we?
Well, we haven't, but no, it doesn't. You can't say I've done one good thing, therefore the five bad things I've done are now forgotten. That's not how it works. So if we had a fully fit squad, I'd have him playing in midfield, and my back two would, if you're going to play a four, my middle two would probably be Viner and Atkinson or Viner and Dickey. And I thought Rob Dickey had a good game last night. Naismith was fine last night, but you know with him that he's always got Omega Rick in him. And I think when you got two players on the left-hand side, as we did against Stoke, you got two players on the left-hand side in Pring, who didn't defend very well on Saturday, and Naismith, who didn't defend very well on Saturday, it becomes a struggle because the opposition would just say, right, we'll get after him, you know, focus on it. The tackle was on Hugel. I think that the last time I remember playing against Hugel, he played for West Brom and scored a hat-trick in that game that was famously Danny Simpson's last game for the club. Not that he played many. But, at the moment, we haven't got a great deal of choice unless we bring one of the kids in. And it probably isn't the best time to do that. No. So we have to persist with that until at least, it looks like Rob Atkinson and Zach Viner will be fit at about the same time. Obviously, Zach's got an advantage that he has played a lot this season. So his match fitness will be a lot further on than Rob Atkinson. But this is the problem when you've got a small squad and you get a glut of injuries in one position.
Chris, in the first half, a game that was refereed by Dean Whitestone, who I believe, I'll stand corrected here, was the referee in the game up at Hull at the start of last season when he gave that penalty that cost us victory or at least a point on the opening day. But there were two penalties that looked to have been given. There was one, I think, when Dickey was grappling going on in the box. But the more blatant one was the foul on Sam Bell when he was on the right side of their 6-yard area. And the referee, it was the wrong side of the pitch for the linesman, but the referee, he was blindsided. He couldn't see the player's arm pulling him down. But what got me, we didn't even appeal. And is it a mental thing that we've given up appealing for penalties because we know we're not going to get them? It's 10 in the last 5 years, you know, two in the last 2.5. But when you played under Joe, there's one thing getting in the referee's face, but if there's a hint of a penalty, if you scream loud enough, you know, are we just sort of shrugging our shoulders and accepting, or were they very marginal decisions and I'm grasping at straws with both of them?
Well, I'm glad I'm not on BBC Radio doing this, David, because I thought the referee was absolutely appalling last night, even before those two decisions. I mean, some of the decisions that were just very basic, as in throw-ins, and some of the fouls that he should have given early on in the game, it played into Rotherham's hand. There was a lot of pushing, shoving, you know, even at throw-ins down the line, you just saw people just shoving with two hands and there was no decision given. It suited Rotherham's style because they're very direct. And I'm thinking this referee is very lenient at this moment in time and it's helping the home team. The referee, I don't want to say too much because it gets boring, but, you know, I think Bristol City need to be, every 11 of those players need to be in the referee's ear from the start of the game because you're not going to get anything away from home if you're not saying things to the referee constantly. It doesn't have to be abusive.
No.
I don't want to encourage that because it gets boring and it's not nice for people to watch. But if you're in midfield, it's a really important position just to keep reminding the referee what kind of decisions should be given. And that's a big part of it actually keeps a team together and bonded when things are necessarily going against you. At least you can all have a quiet word, and it's one after another. But for me, both decisions were penalties, and you know they played it over and over at halftime on Sky because there was not a lot more to show because it was such a poor first half.
And you talk about penalties not given. I mean, on Saturday, even that game, I know you probably didn't see. You know, there was a sights incident.
I saw the forearm smash into Pring's face.
I mean, you know,
that was just amazing.
Blatant. Absolutely blatant. Never mind on Sykes in the first half, which I think you said, Ian, with that one, you didn't think it was, and neither did Neil. But Yeah, it was a forearm smash on camera.
That one, just to let you know, that one's gone to the Referees Association, the PGMOL.
Well,
and reviewed it and said the referee was right. So,
well, the Pring one?
Yeah.
FFS. Goodness yeah, me.
Absolutely. Now, the problem you've got is that referees were all got together and told, look, not you're giving too many free kicks. Not every coming together is a foul, right? So if a bloke falls over, don't automatically blow your whistle. Now, the good referees got their head around it and thought, yeah, well, that's going to let the game flow. It's going to be a lot better. Now, actually, last night, if I said to you how many fouls there were in total, you wouldn't guess 10, would you, all night?
No.
Because that's how many there were, according to the BBC site, anyway.
Go on.
We committed 7, and they got, excuse me, they committed 3.
Oh.
Now, this is when you get a referee and he gets that bit of it wrong and he starts not giving blatant fouls, then all it does is make players think, well, I might as well grab his shirt and push him in the back because, I mean, he ain't going to do anything about it.
What you do, Ian, is you push the boundaries.
Yeah.
And they were a far more physical team than we are. They're at home. They're going to get a small percentage of decisions in their favour. For me, it's just, I mean, there was a period in the second half, just before the goals started to come, and they got throw-in after throw-in. That was never there. I mean, I can remember Cam Pring in the corner just holding his hands in his head. It was just I mean, I know that's the linesman, but it was just...
Well, what about when their player crashed into the goalkeeper and he gave a foul against Sam Bell?
Unbelievable. Absolutely. I mean, Sam Bell was... Even he held his hands up not to get involved in the tackle. You know, it was. And I thought Sam Bell could have gone a bit stronger. You know, that's me.
Well, that's that. I mean, you see, that's that sometimes apathy of, oh, well, it is what it is. You know, you want that aggression that's there. Yeah, we picked up bookings last night. Naki, I know BBC side didn't show, but Naki picked up a booking for dissent, apparently. And if you add that to the one where he kicked the ball away, I mean, those are two silly, unnecessary bookings. But before we wrap up, we'll talk about PGMOL and the VAR incident at the weekend. Let's get into the second half. And God, I felt sorry for Sky trying to make some chat at half-time. I thought they'd rerun the piece they did before the game about us winning the Green Award, which I have to say, that piece that they did with Michelle Owen and the lad that does all the green stuff, I thought it was very good. And I'm a little bit of a cynic over stuff like that, but when they said everything that they were doing, I thought that was good. So at least we won something this year. But back to on-the-pitch action. Substitutions came on the hour, or two of them, 66 minutes. Wells coming on for Cornick. And the out-of-control speedboat, Andy Vyman. I'll talk about him for later. But those substitutions, predictably, Ian, from your perspective? Because Sykes was poor. I thought Sykes was very poor last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you wrote down likely substitutions during the game, you'd always have both wide players coming off because they normally do, whether they're tired or whether they can't last the full game. I'm not sure, although Belly almost lasted the full game last night. We haven't got that big a squad, but I mean, I think some of the substitutions, for example, he's got this thing now where he's bringing Vyman on to play on the left wing when he's got Mometi on the bench, which obviously, if I was Anis Mometi, I'd be thinking, hang on a minute, do I need to get my agent to have a word? Because I seem to be the forgotten man here. And I was going to be the maverick and the one that was going to change stuff. And if any game ever needed a maverick to come on and do something, it was that game last night. But I think we've got a small squad. We haven't got a great deal of options. At the moment, I'm thinking, I don't think Nigel Pearson would do it for a minute, but I'm thinking you could get Vyman into the side and give Jason Knight a well-deserved rest.
Okay. We'll talk about Knight in a minute. Chris?
His touch was, well, all our midfield was poor.
I thought he was very disappointing last night. We spoke about that.
He's just come up from League One football. he might be, you know, struggling a little bit. So give him a bit of time on the bench, bring him in as an impact player with 20, 30 minutes to go, and he might be able to change a game. And he's another one who play a number of positions. I mean, he played four different positions for Derby in the last 2 months of last season, including left wing.
Yeah. All right, Chris, you wanted to make a point there, and I'm guessing it might have been about Mometi, but I'd like your assessment on Jason Knight as well overall. But what was the point you were going to make when Ian was talking? Was it about Mometi and his...
It was about Mometi, and I suppose it's his defensive frailties is worked against him last night. If you're going to put someone on with a lot of energy, who will do his defensive duties, will backtrack, you're always going to go Vinon. But Mometi, for me, he is the forgotten maverick. He's been told to give us an end product, and he's now got so much going on inside his head. He's not even given us all those silky skills or those step overs, and he's not playing. I think
he's not. He's not even playing for the under 21s occasionally, is he? He's just sat on the bench.
So what will happen over a period of time if we don't start playing him, and we've got to get him on that pitch and give him some confidence, is he'll just drift and he'll get lost in his own little bubble of he'll start feeling sorry for himself. And if he honestly, I was so excited when he first came to the club after Semenya left. I thought he was the one that was going to take over that kind of flying mantle, which Sam Bell's taken over. But for me, Mometi has got too much going on between his ears at the moment. He's been told that he needs to give us an end product. He needs to stop giving, you know, having too many touches on the ball. He needs to make sure his final pass finds its destination. And he's thinking about the game too much and nothing's happening for him. So, but going back to last night, I wasn't surprised he didn't come on. Although, as Ian said, if I had an agent, or I was brave enough, I'd go and knock on the manager's door and ask him what was going on and why I'm not playing.
You said there about his defensive duties. I mean, in that respect, do you think Sam Bell does enough to help Cam Pring and Mark Sykes does enough to help George Tanner?
Well, especially not last night. I mean, there was a time that Bell got switched to the right side after substitution, and then the next thing, Gardner Hickman was being exposed because he had tracked back on that side, and then Roberts done it on the other side for the goal. So, and Roberts is more defensive minded. So, too many substitutes for me upsets the balance of any game. It takes a couple of minutes to get focused, get involved. Yeah. You know, you'd expect players to be watching the game from the bench and focused and knowing what their teammates are doing. But it isn't until you're out on the pitch and your heart rate's up and your concentration is flowing that you're actually making a contribution. And sometimes with all these amount of subs, I personally think five subs is too many.
Yeah. I'm talking about subs, and I know it's reflecting back on Saturday. What did you think of bringing on four after 54 minutes?
On Saturday?
Hmm.
I didn't see Saturday. That was so. Ian, you tell me.
We won't dwell on that again because we spoke about it. It was Nigel doing it very early on in the second half on Mass. But let's look at the positives of last night. Just when you're sitting there thinking, "Oh my God, it's going to be a bore draw," and you're going to watch Coronation Street on Plus One or whatever else is coming on. 81 minutes, 2 minutes after he's come on. Ian, you talk us through Tommy Conway's first, because I've called this episode Champions League Goals, Conference League Performance. But take us through Tommy's goal, because it was, you know, he's going to be the next export going out of here to build the nest egg, isn't he?
Well, it was a great diagonal ball out to, a good ball down the line. That was the second goal I was going to talk about then. Good ball down the line, I think it was Naismith, played the ball hard down the line. Now, he tried that a few times earlier on, but there was nobody making the run into that channel. You had Sam Bell with more or less stood out there. But Conway does that. He gets into the channel. He runs wide. Now, as the ball came forward, I don't know where Naki gave the defender a little nudge, but the defender got stuck under the ball. So he jumped up to try and head it, and the ball just went over his head. Tommy Conway reacted first, got into a wide area, and he came into the box from the left. and then took us. It was a fantastic, it was, I mean, you couldn't even call it a chance. It was a fantastic right foot shot across the keeper. And you, I mean, you don't save that with two keepers. So,
well, he rifled it in, didn't he? The amount of power that he got.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're not, I don't think anybody would have saved that. And we've got a note come up from Dave Fairst. The defender just mistimed it. So Naki didn't shove him. So, you know, we got a bit of luck there, didn't we? He's just jumped, mistimed the ball. Ball goes over his head, and there we are. And that's what you get when you've got a forward like Conway on, and you've got Naki up there as well, and you're putting the team under pressure. They haven't got the time to play out like millionaires. They're thinking, oh, no, he's running in behind me, and oh, that little bloke's over there, and he scores. God, good man. And by the time you thought about all that, they're away and they've done something. So great strike. Couldn't fault it. And let's be honest, Tommy came on with 11 minutes of the game to go and he was man of the match.
Yeah. He bound to be.
Everything you want to know about that game, doesn't it?
Chris, how did you see that goal? I mean, it was a goal that Bob Taylor in his prime would have been proud of, wasn't it?
Oh, David, that goal was just absolutely brilliant. It was so out of keeping with the rest of the game, wasn't it? The way he hit the ball was everything. It was perfect. The angle, the weight, the ferocity of it was just brilliant. It was a brilliant finish. Honestly, it just... I almost was stunned when the net rippled at home on the sofa. I just thought... That guy is something else.
If you're he's on people's radar now, but you're looking at that goal, and that is a standout goal, isn't it? Really, that people are going to think, that, he's back.
I think that goal will follow him around for a few years. I mean, that is just a brilliant finish, and the second one was excellent.
Well, come on to that in a second. But sticking with you, Chris.
But that was honestly the first goal. He scores a better goal in his career just with the way he hit it. In such a poor game, it just stands out like a beacon.
Yeah, he said it was probably the best strike. They quizzed him on Sky after the game, and he said probably the best goal, the best strike he's ever got. Maybe not the most important, but, well, it was integral to getting 3 points. But sticking with you, Chris, you know, less than 5 minutes later, and it's back to 1-1. Shitty goal to concede, I have to say. And, nobody on Blackett, totally unmarked. And there's Vyman 3 yards away. I mean, I'm not a Vyman fan, but I put that one down to him in terms of shoddy marking on the edge of the box. And then Max got criticised as well. So how did you see it?
It was terrible. Vyman was off wandering about the clearance up the field. He was just not engaged at all defensively. The ball was still, Rathbone played the ball inside Roberts. The fullback crossed it, called it back. It was a decent finish. He hit it hard enough. Max couldn't see the ball through a load of bodies. But Byron was to blame as much as anyone else.
Well, Dave Fevs has just said on here on the text feed, not Vyman's man. I'd ask the question then, Dave, who should have been marking who should have been the centre half? Who should have been marking that particular player?
I'm gonna disagree with you, because if you're a midfield man, you open up your body and you see who's available, who needs to be picked up, and you react to a hell of a lot. He was on the edge of the box for several seconds. And Vyman was more worried about getting up the field when we were defending something, and he should have slotted it in really quickly. That was painful. That was absolutely painful after that brilliant goal. I talk about frustration on the sofa. My God, that was painful.
Yeah. Well, we weren't mothering the goal, to use Gary's favourite phrase there. Ian, go on. What was your point? I'm going to come to you anyway.
Well, I noticed earlier on from a long throw that Jason Knight was marking Blackett, which seems like a physical mismatch to me. So we've seen it before. We've seen it before with when you had things like, I remember Hando Masengo was marking Mitrovic at Fulham. It's daft, isn't it? You're not going to compete physically with that guy. And I thought, in fairness to our defenders last night, the central defenders, they competed well physically, because Hugh Gill's a handful. He's not a brilliant footballer. which is why he's played the level he's played. And when he moved up a level, he just did. It was West Ham, wasn't it? He just didn't.
So he was a ridiculous fit for West Ham, wasn't he?
Yeah, and but Dave's made a note. King and Roberts didn't communicate for the ball down the line. No, that's quite right. I mean, Roberts hadn't been on the field very long, but he was ball watching for their goal. The cross that came in. So it was, and the shot, I thought Max could have done a lot better with the cross, with the shot. I don't know, it seemed to get a deflection. I don't know if it's Dickie or somebody else tried to dive in front of it. Whether
and Max was going backwards as well.
Well, it was almost as if he was going to save something and then something, whether it was deflected. Now, I didn't see it. I didn't see a clear. Sometimes you see a deflection, you think, well, he had no chance.
He's going interesting here. We've got Tomo and Dave Fevs both trying to exonerate Vyman as an individual and putting it down to lots of players at fault, says Dave, for the goal that was conceded. I just want to backtrack on Mometi, because you were saying, Chris, that he'll disappear. And I'm thinking of players. It's back in the day when we had clubs in the bag. And I remember Mo Issa, he came to us with a decent scoring record. But do either of you go, who was a lad that we got from Scunthorpe that had been one of their top players, another winger? And I want to call him Anions, Adelakken. That's right. Remember him?
Adelakken.
He came from Scunthorpe with a decent track record and never seen again. But there we go. Anyway, so the board's up. It's 1-1, 5-6 minutes of added time. Yeah, Chris cleaning his camera lens there. 6 minutes of added time. And in the fifth one of those six, his first goal was good, Chris, but his second goal wasn't too shabby either, was it?
No, brilliant finish. He just helped on the way with a little flick of the ankle, really, and just helped it round the corner into the bottom right-hand corner. Very athletic. He got up in the air. He got in front of his man. Great run. He knew Andy King was crossing the ball. And he made that little fox in the box run onto the near post. And the kid, he's got everything. It just goes to show. It just goes to show what we're missing.
But he's back. He's back. And when he did that flick, I mean, it could have gone. It just crept in the post, just like his shot did. It crept in. I mean, that could have gone the other side, but maybe that's a mark of his quality, that he knew exactly what he was doing when he connected with that ball, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. No. He that was deliberate. He's not trying to go near post. He's deliberately gone for the far post. And I think there were some comparisons, wasn't there, with another famous goal, of Ibrahimovic, and how he helped on in a famous game himself. So, that was a great goal. And celebrated as
I was just going to say, that to Ian. Ian, you can't fault, never mind how they played, but I say never mind, that sort of brushing that performance under the carpet, but there's a good spirit there. I mean, Tommy looked really happy. Andy King had been provider there. You can't say Nigel hasn't built a collegiate, collective approach to on the field and as a group. Would you agree with that, Ian? And the goal, your take on the goal?
Well, terrific ball from Taylor Gardner-Hickman, who found himself in what may be, because at the moment I'm with Carlos Corbran on the boy. I don't really know what his best position is. I haven't really seen him play enough. I would rather have, on what I've seen, I'd probably rather have George Tanner hit right back. I think he gives you more defensively, whereas Gardner-Hickman gives you a little bit more going forward. He can take a set piece. I've seen some clips of him where he can actually shoot as well. But I'd like to see him being given a go in central midfield. I think he's a, or you could even, you know, I'm doing the thing again about what you can do with a player. He could even play on the right side if Mark Sykes is out. You want a less attacking in front of George Tanner. And that would stop our fullbacks getting exposed. It would also mean, I think, that our fullbacks could actually be a bit more confident in getting forward, because at the moment I think they're terrified that if they go forward and get beyond the winger and it breaks down, there'll be no cover behind him.
And yeah, I think that's a great point, and that's an advocate. But that's changing the system, Ian, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but sometimes you have to. I mean, for example, away from home, I think Nigel Pearson could say, I'm not changing anything. Look how well we're doing. We're joint third best team in the championship away from home based on results. That's a fact. Now, we're the 21st best team at home. Now, I'd love to hear his take on why that is. You know, there are all sorts of theories. I think a lot of it's to do with when we have too much possession, where we tend to not know what to do with the ball because we haven't got a Tinian or a Hartley or a Gary Shelton or somebody that's a bit, you know, it's a bit clever, going to play an unusual pass, little tuck ball or something like that. We haven't got that player. The midfielders, I think Jason Knight can shoot, but he's not getting in great positions. He's got a touch of the Andy Bynum's, the chaotic thing when he's in the final third. And he just needs a good measure of calmness because he's got it. You can see he's got it. It's not like he can't.
Yeah.
You know, as I said to you earlier, Dave, we've had players over the 50-odd years we've been supporting this club. We've had players down here who struggle to kick it in the right direction. So
I played with a few of them.
I can remember that, Chris. But you know, and I looked at, and some of those lads, you never believe it, but they were actually quite popular with the fans because everybody just laughed at them.
And, well, but they had the effort. They had the effort.
No, they had a lot of effort.
That's what, that's what a Bristol fan likes. Is, you know, we like. Yeah, but I'm not effort. Being.
But people looked at him and thought, well, look, the kid can't do it. They've picked him in the side again. Why have they picked him? Give a young lad a go or something like that. But he's picked him again and look how, you know, and people would laugh about it to an extent. We're not like that now. You know, we've got guys who I've seen play and they can play.
They can play a bit. That's the key thing. They can play a bit. Keen to move on because we're all a bit busy this morning. Chris, that's a block of 10. Yeah. You know, it's 1.5 points a game. You know, 4 wins, 3 defeats, 3 draws. Yeah. I mean, it's a decent start. Is it a B plus, a B or a B minus in your book if we're looking in blocks of 10?
For me, look at the table last night. It's fascinating, isn't it? There's a couple of clubs that are really doing well, the Ipswich and the Leicesters. And then there's a couple below. And there's about...
There's 2 points separating 5th from 16th, I think it is, yeah?
Yeah, I was about to say there's 40 teams on the same points almost, isn't there? 1 point gets you in the playoff from where we are. You know, it's concertina dark, it's nice and tight. It just goes to show the championship, if you put a run of consistency together, you're up there. And that's what makes Saturday's results so disappointing, because you can't throw... Away games are your bonus points. You know, you've got to win at home. You've got to get the fans behind you. You've got to make Ashton Gate a fortress. You've got to be presuming that you're going to pick up 3 points each week there, and your away points are just a bonus. At the moment, we're the opposite way around. So, you know, I know we touched on it just then, but it's really important that we win our home games and we're a little bit more consistent there, because that's what will take us up the league.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, 5 points out of our 15 from 5 home games, it's not very good. And as I say, if we'd have beaten Preston, for instance, okay, we were well beaten by Birmingham, or if we'd have, you know, kept it at 2-2 or hung on to that 2-0, well, if we'd have hung on to that 2-0 lead, you know, and just won, we'd have been right up there, you know. But Ian, what's, you know, 10 games in, I think Saturday's more of a natural break because 11 games is pretty much a quarter of the season. And it's a tough one because if you go to Leeds and you get, a win, then that puts us on, what would that put us on? On 18, yeah? That's 70, multiplied by 4, 72 points. You go and you get a loss, it's that 8th, 9th and 10th. Is that us as a team now, an 8th, 9th and 10th position?
I think if we had everyone fully fit and in form, and that's never going to happen, but let's play a little bit of, let's pretend. We've got a top 10 squad.
Yeah.
when you get the players back, and if you look at the players out at the moment, there are five injured. If you said, well, if we could get Atkinson, Viner and
McCrory
back, and McCrory was the guy that Pearson said was going to play right back.
Yeah.
So if you got those back and then you can move players to where they're best, I still think Naismith's best in a holding midfield role. So you've got a top 10 squad, but the problem is we've always got between four and six injured. And we
at the moment, Ian, we've got players that would be first picks for the 11. Well,
that was the case last season when we had players like Matty James out with a foot injury and various other things like that. So I think we've got to find the right shape, the right balance at home to ensure that when we do have a bit more possession, or if a side sits in, and I don't think, to be honest, when I looked at Stoke, I don't think they particularly sat in, where we can press our advantage home, but stop sides grabbing goals back. It's that balance, and I think some of it, you know, I look at the side sometimes and I think when Leicester or Ipswich go somewhere or have a home game, they believe that they'll win. The players you can see absolutely believe it. I don't think all of ours do.
No.
They believe in themselves.
And it's been that home form, Ian, has been a problem for about, I would say, for 4 years, because we've been consistently better away from home for the last four. Chris, you were going to make a point there.
Well, it's funny, you know, considering we were 2-0 up on Saturday off the back of a brilliant defensive performance at Leicester where, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, a penalty decision, I personally thought Bristol City were going to, you know, just finish that game off, just enjoy the 2-0 lead at Ashton Gate and put in a performance which may have led to 3 and 4 goals. But, you know, to concede 3 sloppy goals, from what they've been described to me as, and some of the, you know, the way I've seen them in the highlights, was massively disappointing. You can't afford to do that at home. The fans are your bread and butter. You've got to get those fans on side. You've got to get them through the turnstiles. And at the moment, we're just not doing it. We're just not giving them fans what they need.
But we are being well supported through the club. Yeah. Is being well supported, you know, consistently. When you think only about 5-6 years ago, we were getting gates of 15 or 16. The level of attendances at Ashton Gate are better than they were when we were in the equivalent of the Premier League 43 years ago.
David, have you ever been to B&Q on a Saturday? That's why I go to Ashton Gate most Saturdays.
Chris, if come January we are, and we could talk at length about the way the club is approaching things at the moment, and I'm talking about the level up from Nigel, as he tends to refer to it, but come January, if we're 2 points off the playoffs, as we are now, but half the season has gone, a lot of people were saying with the Scott money, nobody was expecting 10, 15 million of it to be spent. We were expecting a couple more McCrory, Knight type of signings. Do you think they'll relax the purse strings in Jan if we're there or thereabouts with players back from injury? If you were going to, will we spend the money, Chris? And if you were going to spend 4 million in Jan to give us that extra impetus, where would you spend it? What area of the pitch would you spend it?
I think the team always has to evolve. Every window that opens, they're only open every 6 months. If there's a player that's available coming to an end of his contract and it's the right player and they've done all their due diligence, then you have to snap a player up. For me, I would definitely go for another centre-forward. I think we're light up there with Cornick, Wells and Conway. Only goes to show what happens when one of them's injured, they're struggling. I would probably go for another midfielder. And obviously, depending on, it's hard because we've got two centre-halves out injured at the moment. You might need another one there, you know, and that's the spine of the team. But listen, it's a squad in progress. We've got a very small squad in comparison to some of the bigger teams in the league. But, you know, going back to, again, what Ian was saying, you, as a manager, you've almost got to expect that 4 to 6 players are going to be out at any one time during any season. And it happens to every club.
Yeah.
You know, you walk into any medical room and there's always 4 to 6 players out injured. Yeah. And you just got to pray they're not in the same position because it can leave you really empty in those.
And that's what happened last season with Andy King playing at centre half. I mean, Ian, do you think in Jan, if we're where we are now, there might be a relaxation of the purse strings at all? Or do you think we're just going to view this a season of consolidation? I mean, it's interesting. The first 10 games of Nigel's 3 complete seasons in charge that we're into now, we've got 13, 14 and 15 points after 10 games in each of the last 3. You know, do you think if we're where we are at the turn of the year, Nigel should be offered a contract extension? Yeah, I meant to ask Chris that, but we'll pass on that until next time. But in your position, Ian, what do you feel?
If what you're saying is if we're a point off the playoffs at Christmas.
January, no, because you get the Christmas New Year games out of the way, end of the, when the window opens, right? First week of Jan.
Well, January the first day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, do I think if we were a point off the playoffs, do I think money would be available? Yes. I think Steve Lansdowne would relax the purse strings a bit. He's got a few issues at the moment with planning permission and judicial reviews, and he's trying to build 510 houses in a field to fund the development of the sporting quarter, which has just been put on hold. So at the moment, he's got a lot of irons in the fire when it comes to spending money. But if we're a point off the playoffs come the 1st of January, it would be ridiculous not to make some key signings to strengthen the team, even if they were only loans. So you can spend an amount of money for the last 3-4 months of the season and say, right, you can go out and bring in 2 or 3 top quality, and they have to be top quality, not, you know, another one from the bottle, as Mourinho said. They have to be top quality signings that are going to,
they're going to walk into the side and make a difference, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's like I said to you the other week, Dave, when you're saying, well, you know, you can't really drop Joe Williams and you can't really drop Matty.
Well, James. I didn't say that. I've never said you can't.
Wait a minute, I did. And if you remember, I said to you, well, okay, then, so if we could get coming back from injury, Kevin De Bruyne on loan, would you play him? And you said, well yeah, I'd play him. So that's the point. They have to be a player that comes in and you think, oh, blimey, he's good. And we've had it with loan players before where they come in and they're just, well, they're about 15, 20% better than the lads here. You know, if you could get, you said about a number 9, if you get Tammy Abraham back, I mean, what a signing. So,
well, he was. Yeah, that's it. That's the best indication of that.
That's what I think we need to take us to the next level. And it depends, once again, who's fit, because we might get to a situation where the defenders are back, but we haven't got any midfield players.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
What do you need? Well, we need what we currently haven't got. And I just think, I've been saying it for a long time and I'll keep saying it, the squad needs to be a little bit bigger to allow for the injuries.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not talking about 40 players like it was under Lee Johnson. I'm talking about another 3.
I was just going to say that number to take the selectable squad up to 30. Right. Just to wrap up with you both, or Prince, I know you've got to get away very shortly, Ian, but Chris, first of all, PGMOL, Professional Game Match Officials Limited, VAR at the weekend, you know, it brought its inadequacies or everything into sharp focus, the Spurs-Liverpool game, Jurgen Klopp saying the game should be replayed. Everybody's heard the tapes now. I'm surprised that that has been put in the public domain, but it shows a lack of professionalism or concise communication. I mean, what do you think of that whole episode that's gone by this weekend?
Well, it's thrown the officials under a bus, hasn't it, by releasing that information. I think that wasn't necessary. it gives everyone a massive talking point around the game. And again, people in authority had their positions exposed. For me, I am so grateful the Championship doesn't have VAR. I think you know, regardless of those silly decisions last night by the referee, which there was far too many, I love the Championship the way it is. And I didn't want VAR from day one. I've had loads of conversations with friends about it, probably with you guys as well. I just think it slows the game up. It's painful. And it's not great. But those decisions over the weekend, we're talking about millimeters. You know, the game is meant to be played to the naked eye. It's meant to be at the speed it's at. Do you know what? There's been mistakes made by officials over the years, and you know, Jurgen Klopp asking for the game to be replayed. He needs to wind his neck in and get over himself, really.
Yeah. Ian, your take on it? And we talk about mistakes. Do you remember that Leeds-West Brom game right about 1969 when, was it West Brom broke away and clearly offside, you know, and that probably, maybe that was the year, was it, that Leeds lost the Championship to Derby?
Well, how about the time down at Ashton Gate when Palace had the ball in the net and the referee didn't give the goal?
Yeah.
So, and that guy's still refereeing in the Premier League. So the way I see it, I don't think there's anything wrong at all with the system itself. It's a piece of IT, right? The problem is people that can't draw a straight line. In fact, they don't even need to draw it. They showed what happens yesterday, and you get a whole number of lines moving up the pitch like that. And when one touches the player closest to the goal's foot, it stops. So you can see who's closest to the goal. They saw that on Saturday, and still, two of them gave the wrong decision.
Well, it was poor communication.
It was a lack of ability. These guys, you saw the referee last night, right? Now, if I couldn't referee a game better than that, I'd pack up refereeing.
Mm.
Because, you know, there were two blatant penalties that with VAR would have been given. No doubt about it. They'd have both, the Dickey wrestled to the floor and dragging back. I mean, he had Sam Bell. He had both arms round his waist.
Yeah.
Absolute bear hug. Now, if you're looking at that as a referee and thinking, I don't know. No, that's a penalty, mate. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to pull someone's shirt. You're not allowed to get him in headlock, right?
Yeah.
Not allowed to do any of that shit. If you are allowed to do it, you better show me the refereeing manual, the coaching manual where it says it. So I unlike Chris, and I respect Chris's opinion, I can see it from both sides. But unlike Chris, I would have VAR in the Championship. And I do expect the officials to get it right. And in order to do that, sometimes they need to take an extra minute, right? Take an extra minute and get it right rather than rush it and get it wrong.
Yeah. I mean, my take on it, just to wrap up, is that...
Oh, sorry. You know, by the way, I agree that the game shouldn't be replayed because if...
Yeah, it shouldn't, because it's a can of worms. It's just a
open up a... You know, you're going to...
Yeah, it's not even a can of worms. Somebody said it's a vat of worms if you do it. My take on it is that Saturday, you know, it was lack of communication because VAR said it was a goal, but they didn't realise the goal and they didn't pull the game back because the laws of the game were... as Chris said, you know, maybe it wasn't the easiest thing to do for the people involved to have that transcript released.
That's people, I've seen it a lot over the years, not just in football, but in business, where people get overly concerned about the process.
Yeah.
Forget what they're trying to achieve. So what's the end game? The end game is to get the decision right.
Get the decision right. I mean, my take on all of it is I won't be alive to see this, but I would say, well, hopefully I'm 67 now, but I would say within 25 years, if you look at the way automation is going, football will still be played by people, but the referee could easily, when you look at what some of these robot things are capable of doing now, the referee could be a robot, and in his head, he would have all the cameras, angles, all the sensors and everything. And you could see matches being refereed by robot referees who would have everything at their disposal. That's maybe a little bit bold statement to make, but I've just made it. There we go. We'll be doing our Leeds review on Sunday morning, I think, more likely than the Saturday evening. So Sunday morning, doing this live. Chris, thanks for coming and joining us and giving your, as ever, erudite views. I loved the text you were sending me last night that was on there. You know, I could have made a match report out of all of that. But it's been great to have you on. Ian, good to have you on, as always. And everybody who's been listening on this live stream, great. And everybody who listens to the download, thanks a lot for your support. All the best, everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah, cheers all.
What if I've been unlucky? Really, I ain't got a thing. There's a time I always feel happy. As happy as a king. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When red robins are bobbing along. When the red robin comes bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts robbing his old sweet song. Oh, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red robin starts bobbing along.